Good evening and welcome back on this Saturday, the 26th day of December, 2020. I'm your host, Mark Call. And more often than not, folks, around this time of year, it's difficult to find enough news, given that just about everybody has taken the week off, to do a show on a day like today. And I guess I'd have to say that, unfortunately, this year, for obvious reasons, is a major exception to that. No, the other few shoes that people seem to be waiting to drop haven't dropped yet. That'll no doubt happen soon, or it'll get even worse. But certainly some things have happened, and let's get right to it. Starting with vetoes and pardons, and pretty much in that order. On Wednesday afternoon, President Trump vetoed one of the two pork-laden, massively politically correct Swamp Central bills that demonstrate again just so clearly why the Washington Swamp needed draining years ago. Even though the misnamed National Defense Authorization Act passed both corruption-filled houses of Congress with veto-proof supermajorities, Trump vetoed that $740 billion mess, as he promised, because, among other things, it wouldn't allow for the removal of our military from, as he put it, far away and very unappreciative lands. Tweeting that he thought it would make China very unhappy, because they love it, and he noted several other problems, too. The bill should have had that Section 230 termination that he'd asked for, along with the American people, because once upon a time we had a First Amendment, and as has become pretty obvious, that fascist public-private partnership that consists of Big Brother and its arms called Twitter, Two Facebook, Gulag, and the like, doesn't allow anything remotely approaching free speech or even honest reporting anymore. The president's official veto message said that he was returning, quote, without my approval, H.R. 6395, the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2021. My administration, he added, recognizes the importance of the act to our national security. Unfortunately, he said, it fails to include critical national security measures, includes provisions that fail to respect our veterans and our military's history, and contradicts efforts by my administration to put America first in our national security and foreign policy actions. It is, he said, a gift to China and Russia. He also again took issue with the renaming of certain military installations. Notably, the statement didn't use terms like General Robert E. Lee or even name the bases like Fort Bragg, Fort Hood, and Fort Benning that have been threatened with politically correct renaming, or mention the Confederacy by name, but did say that the administration respects the legacy of the millions of American servicemen and women who've served with honor at these military bases and who from those locations have fought, bled, and died for their country. And he's been clear in his opposition to politically motivated attempts like this one to wash away history and dishonor the immense progress our country has fought for in realizing our founding principles. Which principles, of course, folks, are being literally destroyed before our eyes right now. He went on to note that his administration has worked hard and spent over $2 trillion during his 4 years in office with the support of many others, and has almost entirely rebuilt the United States military, which he said was totally depleted when he took office. But, he told Congress, your failure to terminate the very dangerous national security risk of Section 230 will make our intelligence virtually impossible to conduct without everyone knowing what we're doing at every step. The act even fails to mention any meaningful changes to Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, despite bipartisan calls for repealing that provision. Section 230, he said, facilitates the spread of foreign disinformation online, which is a serious threat to our national security and election integrity. Ah, there it is. It must be repealed. Now, what your host found most interesting about this was that it's one of two indications that the president seems to be growing a backbone, or maybe even regrowing, because in some respects it looks a bit more like the man who first entered the Oval Office about 4 years ago. Almost like he intends to not only continue the fight, but actually stay in office. Because otherwise, why not just cave in to the left and the rhinos and submit to the inevitable? So, on the second point of those two, it will be interesting to see whether Congress votes to override the president. Some members of the GOP, SIC, are still saying they support that abomination of the NDAA, but might just stand by the president and vote to sustain the veto anyway. And who knows, some of them might even be moved to sustain the veto if they had enough pressure from their constituents saying, hey, whatever happened to free speech in this country, you slimebag you? on the threatened veto of the bill that's rightfully been labeled porculous, not to mention one of the biggest slaps in the face to constitutional and fiscal sanity in the sordid history of this former republic. It looks like the socialists in the House haven't come through on their promise either. House Democrats on Thursday, says the summary from Zero Hedge, failed to replace those measly $600 direct checks in the latest pandemic relief bill. Do the math, folks. They're giving a whole lot more to most people in foreign countries than they are so-called taxpaying Americans. Most reports seem to suggest that the porculous bill would cost the average American taxpayer about $6,000, of which they might get back, oh, maybe 10% in that check. And that's obviously before the coming hyperinflation, or before the coming Great Reset, in which the socialists plan to take everything they have left. And in this case, it was House Republicans that refused to go along with the unanimous consent to pass out more pork to everybody. Anyway, they'll try again on Monday with a new standalone bill for those $2,000 checks, says Nutcase Nancy, speaker for the traitors. They're also going to attempt to override Trump's veto of that NDAA, since government spending and funding is set to lapse. Oh no, who could imagine anything worse than Big Brother having to shut down? And don't kid yourself, folks. The important tyrannies aren't about to shut down even for a second, especially now. So look for the House to at least consider passing another, what else, stopgap measure to keep the swamp and almost nothing else in America with a K in business. And on to the other executive news, where after the pardons earlier in the week, President Trump on Wednesday evening asserted his constitutional authority and announced 26 new pardons, including to Paul Manafort and longtime friend and once confidant Roger Stone, who had previously only had his sentence commuted. And among others on the Wednesday pardon list was son-in-law Jared Kushner's father, Charles Kushner, who'd been charged with tax evasion and witness tampering. And I do like the way Christina Layla summarizes all of this for the Gateway Pundit. Given the pardons on Tuesday of George Papadopoulos and London-based lawyer Alex van der Zwaan, who were all indicted by the Mueller witch hunt, these last few kind of now make Andy Weissman's, Robert Mueller's, two-year inquisition go up in flames. At this point, I want to shift gears for a bit and take a look back at some of the other stories for the week, including one of the most disgusting that I've ever, well, that's a tall order, but one of the most disgusting I've ever seen. And honestly, folks, when I saw this one, it was really tough to even want to bring myself to do this story. So I hope you'll stick with me as we get to the point, even though it'll be a challenge for all of us. From the UK's Daily Mail, and they're getting to be almost as bad as the New York Times and WAPO. Maybe they should tint the background yellow on their page. Anyway, here's the headline. Bill Barr, oh yeah, the scumbag de tutte AGs. And he almost makes me long for the butcher of Waco, Janet Reno. Certainly there's one thing you can say about attorneys general for the United States, and that is, when it comes to integrity, they got none. Bill Barr says there's no reason to appoint special counsels on Hunter Biden or election fraud, or for that matter, any of the other criminals that he lets get away with whatever they blankety-blanket-well want to. No, he doesn't want to seize voting machines either, and publicly, one time after another, it says he's slapping down Donald Trump's demands in the wake of losing the rigged election. Oh, and he agrees with the Secretary of State and scumbag Mike Pompeo, too, that Russia, Russia, Russia is behind that huge government hack. Nothing to see here. Move along, move along. Oh, and the Hunter Biden investigation is already being handled professionally. Oh, you betcha, folks. John Gotti was a professional. So was the D.C. madam, and she'd have made a lot better prosecutor. Barr's last day is Wednesday, it says, finally. And that, folks, is at least 30 years too late. Just watching that guy move his lips makes me feel the need to take a shower. Trump has made some absolutely horrible appointments, but that guy is working hard to do more damage to the Republic than Jeff Sessions. But yeah, finally, as of Wednesday, we can refer to him in the past tense. So given the increasing number of whoppers that Barr kept tossing out in his last few days, this is a good story to follow that up with. Comes from Joe Hoft at the Gateway Pundit under the headline, Simple Math, and that's about all that Americans can handle anymore, shows that Biden claims 13 million more votes than there were eligible voters in the 2020 election. Now, this is kind of interesting. They start with Bill Binney, constitutional patriot and the former chief technical guy at No Such Agency, turned amazing whistleblower, and he's paid for it. Over the weekend, he tweeted the following. With 212 million registered voters and 66.2% of them allegedly voting, that means 140.344 million people voted. Now, if Trump got 74 million, that leaves only 66.3 million for Biden. These numbers simply don't add up, given what we're being told. Lies and more lies, he said. Prompting Joe Hoff to go through quite a bit more detail, and they start with the WAPO, which compared the 2020 election to other high turnout presidential elections, you know, because people were so excited to vote for Joe Biden. And even the WAPO didn't touch that one, they note. Bill Binney attached a link to the number of registered voters in each state in the U.S. Writes Hoft, using the current numbers, we find a huge issue. 213.8 million registered voters in the U.S. If 66.2% of all of them voted in 2020, that equals 141.5 million voters who voted in the 2020 election, basically what Bill Binney shows. And if President Trump won 74 million of those, that leaves only 67.5 million remaining for the senile creepy one. Meaning that at least 13 million duplicate and or made up ballots were created and counted for Biden. Which basically is one of the few things that's consistent about this election. It shows that Biden committed fraud in every imaginable way, and a whole lot that the waste-stream press not only won't imagine, won't even allow you to talk about, but the big steal was in millions of fraudulent votes simply created to steal the election for Biden. And we're talking millions. Which leads me to this next story, also courtesy of the yellow journalist at the UK Daily Mail. And their headline right here tells you exactly where they butter their bread. Conspiracy theorist attorney Sidney Powell meets Trump in the White House for the second time in 48 hours, and they capitalize it as if that's some kind of sin, to pitch a plan to use executive orders to seize voting machines for inspection. Yes, she was spotted in the White House on Sunday night, they say breathlessly, and that visit came just 2 days after an Oval Office meeting where President Trump floated the idea of naming her special counsel to investigate election fraud. They don't say it. I'll put the words widespread, undeniable, and overwhelming in there. CNN saw Powell leaving the residence at the White House and ask about it. She told the network, quote, it would be none of your business. You tell them, Sidney. If you dig down into this piece of yellow journalistic pap, it does say this, attributed to a so-called insider source to Axios, quote, it's basically Sidney versus everybody. That's why voices were raised. There's literally not one motherfucker in the president's entire orbit, his staunchest group of supporters and allies, who doesn't think that Sidney Powell should be on the first rocket to Mars, unquote. And I force myself to read that, folks, just to make the point via the contrast. In an entire group of so-called advisors and scumbags, you'd think that there'd be at least a few votes to put Bill Barr on that first rocket to Mars. And the fact that they're saying this instead tells us all we need to know about the level of integrity that's being reported on here. Which brings me to one of those stories that I debated not including in the show for this evening, but I think it's appropriate and important just for perspective and to indicate the things that we're talking about and what's happening and what's not happening and who some of the people are that aren't doing their constitutional duties. One of those things, of course, that really represents the shoe still to drop in the 2020 election as we wrap up the year has to do with what, if any, truly dramatic actions the president will take to try to save the republic and expose not only the level of perfidy in the deep state, but the pervasiveness of the Communist Chinese Party and its takeover of a once free nation. As the courts basically cop out, what's left is the insurrection option, and of course the seizure of the various voting machines around the nation by the military and or somebody that will actually honor their oath of office in order to do some real forensic analysis of the steal. Although no doubt much of the evidence has either been wiped or destroyed by now, there still might be stuff in the NSA archives, remember. President Trump raised more than a few eyebrows by retweeting an analysis by Ivan Raiklin about what's called the Pence option. He said, Pence must do this. Evidently putting some pressure on his VP, we'll see if it takes, although by Friday it certainly began to look like the answer was no, to act in obedience to the United States Constitution, and by the way, his oath. In brief, Raiklin's analysis points out that Article 2, Section 1 of the U.S. Constitution, as your host has noted for quite some time now, requires that each state shall appoint, in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct, a number of electors. Well, in the disputed swing states, they clearly didn't do that, rendering their state's electors impermissible. For that reason, he says, Vice President Mike Pence and President of the Senate is not only duty-bound to request that the state send certificates and list, as required by Title III United States Codes, Section 9 and 11, from electors that were appointed in the manner directed by the state legislatures as soon as possible, or essentially he'll have to take the appropriate action to select and seat those that are, or maybe not anyone at all. He is also the sole plenary power that has the authority to make that determination. So, said Raiklin and the president, Pence needs to send a letter to the various secretaries of state telling them that since their electors were not appointed in the manner that the state legislature directed, because the state's elections were marred with various violations of law and other criminal acts, I need you to send the actual electors as soon as possible and before January 6th. In short, since Pence knows that the Electoral College recommendations of those states were a result of fraud, he is duty-bound to throw them out. In a two-hour bombshell interview that's making waves all over the web, former Overstock CEO Patrick Byrne, who was at that five-hour meeting with the president and, among others, Sidney Powell over the weekend, seems to shrug off playing the Pence card. Can we really trust him to grow that kind of a backbone anyway? Your host can't help but wonder. And there's certainly no sign of it so far. And says there is still a whole lot of massive, incontrovertible evidence of incredible election fraud at the systemic level from which there's no coming back, and it'll all be released at the right time. Yeah, I know, it had better be soon. And during the interview, he also made it very clear that Trump's upper-level staff, including his chief of staff and White House counsel Pat Cipollone, are simply trying to thwart him, convince him to cave, give up the fight, and allow the Republic to go down like their deep state masters have been pushing for. He said Trump had ordered Sidney Powell to be named a special prosecutor and given a special clearance to enable that, as well as to have his staff give her whatever she needed, but said what they're doing instead is literally preventing him from being able to meet with her or even make contact when she needs to. He says he's never seen anything like it, but it certainly helps explain a lot of what we've been seeing. By Friday, we had this follow-up from Tom Ozimek via the Epoch Times, which was pretty much a second witness for things that Patrick Byrne, who was at the meeting, had also said earlier. Attorney Sidney Powell said in a December 23 interview with Zinger News that senior White House aides are, in fact, preventing her from communicating with the president and blocking her efforts to assume a formal coordinating role in pursuit of the contest of election challenges on the president's behalf. Powell previously said that she was verbally offered the position of special White House counsel by Trump during that meeting last Friday, but that she's been unable to present the president with any paperwork that would make it official and that her appointment has effectively been blocked. Quote, "It's not come to pass," said Powell, "because it seems it was blocked after Friday night or undone, or I'm not sure what you'd call it, by senior White House staff." She made it clear that the role she was offered was not a Robert Mueller-style, in other words, witch hunt, special counsel, but there was, she said, a discussion about me being a special White House counsel. One is appointed by the Attorney General, while a special White House counsel can be appointed directly by the President. And even though Bill Barr is gone, the influence of those who want to destroy the Republic is still prevalent in White House staff that seem to serve the deep state rather than the Oval Office. For his part, on Wednesday, the president doubled down on his calls for the appointment of a special counsel to probe election fraud, writing, "I disagree with anyone that thinks that a strong, fast, and fair special counsel is not needed. Immediately." He puts it all in caps. This, he said, was the most corrupt election in the history of our country, and it must be closely examined. Exclamation point, unquote. Is the level of openly communist infiltration throughout the entire swamp at this point beyond terminal, or is there still hope? And folks, if there is to be, it's going to take some truly dramatic action, and real soon now. Which means that any of several stories I might have wanted to start off with this evening, I didn't. They would, however, have included things like the following. Massive arrests in the criminal swamps and in state houses across the country. Voting machines seized. Communist spies outed. 7th Florida FBI arrested, most of DOJ arrested, CIA arrested, most of Maricopa County officials arrested, also in Philadelphia, Detroit, Atlanta, Las Vegas, and so on. Nope, nothing of the sort, and time draws short. So I'll wrap up this first segment for this evening with an op-ed from Pat Buchanan in a story entitled, Can Democracy Hold Us Together? And right there, you know, as usual, there are some things in here that I would agree with and also disagree with pretty strongly. But he begins like this. If America were a company and not a country, we would have long ago dissolved the corporation, split the blanket, and gone our separate ways. So what still holds this disputatious and divided people together, he asks? Consider. In announcing that $900 billion so-called stimulus bill to deal with the plandemic, Speaker Nutcase Nancy didn't mention that the gifts for her distressed countrymen and women at Christmas would have been twice as large had she taken President Trump's offer of $1.8 trillion back in October. So rather than let Donald Trump take any credit, Pelosi stiffed millions of Americans. And on Sunday, she added this, Congress will continue our work to rid the Capitol of homages to hate, meaning the statue of Robert E. Lee in Statuary Hall, which, notes Buchanan, has stood in a place of honor in the Capitol for decades. Just exactly when did the statue of the general become an homage to hate? Both episodes point to an unpleasant truth. Our dysfunctional American family, he should have spelled it with a K, agrees upon less and less. By mid-November, according to a Reuters Ipsos poll, 52% of Republicans thought Donald Trump had rightfully won, 68% thought the election was rigged, and a third of independents and at least 10% even of Democrats all agreed. This month, though, that number had risen to a third of all registered voters who believe the 2020 election was stolen, and over three-quarters of those who voted for Trump believed that. And that's in spite of the best efforts of the ministries of truth, folks. In the long term, not only, he says, is the election of 2020 going to be suspect, so is belief in one of the sacraments of secular democracy, universal suffrage. Meanwhile, though, a slice of the intellectual hoi polloi emphatically agree with the New York Times Project 1619, which decrees that the real birthdate of this nation was not 1776, nor even the constitutional year 1789, but the year the first slave ship arrived in Virginia. The enslavement of black people brought from Africa, along with the dispossession and destruction of the indigenous tribes, are the defining events, they say, of our history. And all who participated in those crimes against humanity, not counting the new ones they're participating in today, of course, folks, are undeserving of exaltation. And that includes not only Robert E. Lee, but Columbus and Presidents Washington, Jefferson, Madison, Jackson, Teddy Roosevelt, and so forth, all racist white men whose disgraceful and even criminal conduct disqualifies them from a place of honor in the American pantheon of 2020. All such statues are homages to hate, say the nutcases like Pelosi. She may not have believed that 10 years ago, but she seems to today, and what's taken place is a mass conversion. Yet, he writes, there really still is an America that cherishes the nation these men created, as did their fathers, grandfathers, and ancestors, and they've shown a willingness to fight and die in her defense. Seems that we Americans now disagree on the most fundamental of issues. Some, he continues, see new rights created out of whole cloth, like the right to kill your baby or commit sodomy, as major milestones in the progress towards a more moral, or at least whatever now passes for it, America. Others see them as long strides away from the biblically literate country that we used to be, and a social and moral decline towards the same quiet death that has come to other civilizations and nations that went downhill before us. In short, he says, we Americans now disagree on whether our country is a good and great nation worth defending or a place that needs a deep cultural cleansing of its sins, whether or not they're written about in Scripture. And we have no common code of morality anymore either. One side is rooted in modernism and secularism, and the other in the teachings of the Old and New Testaments, Christian tradition, and the natural law written on the human heart that's superior to man-made law. People who disagree upon such basic beliefs naturally tend to drift apart, just as we Americans are doing today. Can a republic as fractured and splintered as ours is, he asks, racially, ethnically, politically, culturally, morally, with a population who does not share the same belief about whether their nation is good and great or failed and evil, even endure? And for how long? We'll be right back after the bottom of the hour break.
Amen.
No, it's not the boogie-woogie flu. It's the booga-booga flu, and you're supposed to be afraid, be very afraid of it, enough so that you'll go and be a guinea pig for the New World Order's How Dumbed Down Are They test program. Welcome back now to the second segment of the show for this evening. And I feel like the news show today is a response to the question, just how many lies will the people of the world swallow? Answer, there doesn't seem to be any limit. It's ironic, isn't it, how there's no evidence whatsoever of the biggest election fraud in world history, from dead people voting to Dominion. But when it comes to evidence of the biggest booga booga flu, oh!
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
The evil waste-stream media doesn't have any problems making up evidence out of whole cloth. To the point, folks, where I'm going to rephrase Mark Twain's old statement about statistics. Yeah, there's lies, damn lies, and the waste-stream media and their statistics. So here the banner booga 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 headline from the British version of the New York Times and WAPO. The Daily Mail, which tries breathlessly to get you to believe this. 2020 is the deadliest year in U.S. history, with deaths expected to top 3 million in great big bold caps for the first time, as COVID-19 84 fatalities surged to record highs, with one American dying every 33 seconds in the last week. The largest leap since 1918, it tells us, and the Spanish flu epidemic, and deaths could even go higher once all fatalities from this month are counted. Oh, it's scary. It's beyond scary, folks. It's terrifying. So better quick get your jab, your poke, your poorly tested DNA-modifying vaccine, your Cyclone B. While there's still time, people are lining up now to be the first in line to volunteer for being a guinea pig in their block. Why, Dr. Mengele and his satanic elves are even telling you that Santa Claus had to take it. But that's not going to prevent him from having to wear a mask anyway. Let me try to be as kind as I can. This is unmitigated crap. Deaths usually rise, it tells us in the third paragraph, in, 20 to 50,000 people each year, mostly due to the nation's aging and growing population. Here's what they don't tell you. There's not only the booga 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 flu this year, folks. There's the greatest economic meltdown in history. Ironically, mostly as a direct result of the government over-response to the booga booga flu itself. There's a famine coming, a whole lot of people living in tents and on the streets, but not nearly as many as Big Brother's fixing to have join them real soon now. There's been a huge influx of illegal aliens, along with all kinds of exotic and wonderful diseases they've brought in. But don't worry, you can rest assured all the deaths that are associated with those will end up being called COVID-19 anyway. And all kinds of other things, like needles and feces in the streets in most of the major leftist cities. No health problems there, right? Oh, and let's not forget the increases in suicides, too, because of the booga booga flu, all of which are explicitly not being broken out in a statistically honest way. COVID-19, it tells us about 7 paragraphs down, has so far killed more than 319,000 Americans this year, and the death toll is only surging. And that's worse than a damn lie, folks. It's an unconscionable one. Yeah, and that's especially true when they add in everything from motorcycle accidents to gunshot wounds to alcohol fatalities and call them COVID-19. This is yellow journalism at its most toxic. And it's hardly limited to the one disgusting full-color example I picked out. The U.S. leftist rags are just as deceptive, if a bit more subtle. And let me highlight just a couple of the most disgusting examples in this. 2020 is the deadliest year, says their headline. Deaths expected to top 3 million, and then they put COVID-19 right in there. Even though, wait a minute, 3 million is a lot bigger, isn't it, even than the inflated 300,000 number, by a factor of 10 or so. After all, people still do die from automobile accidents. They're not all called COVID deaths. And notice how they throw that bogus claim of one death every 33 seconds from the booga booga flu right in the same headline, as if you're somehow or other supposed to psychologically associate the number 3 million with the COVID deaths. They got a couple of charts in this piece that are literally an exercise in deception. One, for example, that's what a statistician or an engineer would call a really noisy graph. that purports to show you just how many more booga 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 deaths there are this year, as if somehow it's the COVID that did it. In fact, it shows nothing of the sort. And here's a scary one, number of new U.S. infections per day. Wait a minute, is it an infection or a case? And what counts as a case? Oh, yeah, anybody that's silly enough to take the test, hear that they somehow tested positive, and think that has anything to do with whether or not they're sick. And here, folks, one more time, I did a word search on this long, really scary piece. Would you believe the word false positive nowhere appears in here? As a matter of fact, not even so much as a hint about the entire issue itself. And here's a bit of scary crapola, again from the same article. The COVID-19 epidemic has been a big driver of deaths this year, both directly and indirectly. That's as close as they get to the truth, but not for the reasons they're trying to get you to believe. The virus has become the third leading cause of death in the U.S., behind only heart disease and cancer. Why, folks? Because they quit calling anything else anything but COVID, and they lump those numbers into the category they want to be really big and scary. Listen to this. For certain periods this year, they say, COVID-19 was the number one killer, but other types of death have also increased. A burst of pneumonia cases earlier this year may have been COVID-19 deaths that simply weren't recognized as such early in the epidemic. What doesn't it say? A whole bunch of pneumonia cases that are still out there are now being called COVID-19, whether they are or not. Notice you haven't heard about any other flu deaths now, have you? Oh, yes, listen to this. There have also been an unexpected number of deaths from certain types of heart and circulatory diseases, diabetes and dementia. Many of these, too, may be related to COVID. Well, whether they are or not, yep, we're going to call them that. Because, as their so-called expert from the CDC says, the virus could have weakened patients already fixing to die with those conditions, or they could have diminished the care they were getting. Well, that comes closer to the truth, but it's certainly not necessarily accurate, is it, to call it a COVID death because people suffered as a result of getting ignored due to the booga booga flu. Or worse still, folks got put into quarantine so that they could die alone. So from there, for some counterpoint and a bit more truth, let's turn to a story via Zero Hedge from Campus Reform about the Johns Hopkins University newspaper, which was pressured, it would seem, into removing a study examining the COVID-19 death rate. The newsletter, the Johns Hopkins University student newspaper, reported on a university presentation stating that COVID-19 had, quote, no effect on the percentage of deaths of older people, and that the virus has, quote, also not increased the total number of deaths in comparison to historical data. However, the paper later had to remove the article, stating it had been used to support, quote, dangerous inaccuracies on socialist media. Before it was censored, though, Assistant Director for the University's Applied Economics Program, Genevieve Briand, critically analyzed the net effect of COVID-19 on deaths in the United States based on historical data. And using information from that same CDC, Briand identified the percentages of total deaths per age category, both before and after the pandemic began. And surprisingly, she said, the deaths of older people stayed the same, both before and after COVID. And since COVID-19 mainly affects the elderly, experts expected an increase in the percentage of deaths in older age groups. However, this increase is not seen from the CDC data. In fact, the percentages of deaths among all age groups remained relatively the same. And though deaths in categories like respiratory illnesses and heart disease seasonally tend to rise and fall together in the United States, Briand noticed a strange trend. Quote, instead of the expected drastic increase across all causes, there was a significant decrease in deaths due to heart disease, she said, in addition to all other causes. Additionally, the total decrease in deaths by other causes almost exactly equals the increase in deaths by COVID-19, 84. Gee, folks, who could have thought it? Almost like there was something, well, statistically, maybe in a manipulation sense, going on there. All of this, she continued, points to no evidence that COVID-19 created any excess deaths. And if you did not see the term excess deaths in a story like that bit of tripe from the Daily Mail, folks, You know that's exactly what it is. And yeah, folks, I did check. No, the word excess deaths is not in there, and it does kind of look like they're trying to hide something. All of which, says Briant, points to no evidence that COVID-19 created any excess deaths. Total death numbers are not above normal death numbers. We found no evidence to the contrary, she concluded in her presentation, telling the newsletter that a decreased number of heart attacks and all the other death causes doesn't give us a choice but to point to some, misclassification, unquote. Commenting on the censorship, and yeah, folks, that's what I'm going to call it, the staff said, quote, we did not intend to silence Briant. Instead, we sought to put her claims in conversation with findings from Hopkins. In other words, the officials nailed us here. The World Health Organization, SICK, and the CDC, unquote. Asked about the situation by Campus Reform, said Briant herself, well, the CDC data is available, anyone can download it, so anyone can easily replicate my analysis. Unquote. Well, at least for now, I guess. And here, folks, I have to say it one more time. The level of statistical ignorance demonstrated by the so-called media is downright underwhelming. And the fact that the generally dumbed-down public doesn't call them out on it, or just plain switch them off, speaks volumes, too. What's really interesting to your host is the consistency here, though. There's no evidence whatsoever of massive election fraud. At least that's what they try to get you to swallow. And isn't it ironic that crooked electronic voting machines can switch votes from Trump to Biden just like the CDC can switch deaths from heart attack and pneumonia, not to mention seasonal flu that just plain isn't this year, to COVID-1984. And the same kind of ignorance, masquerading under the guise of idiocy, covers them all up. And obviously, that's what the muzzles are to symbolize. So make sure you get in line for your Zyklon B jab. Or, if you have half a brain, maybe not. But it's interesting that this story is appearing up on the web, too. I saw it in more than one place, ultimately courtesy of the CDC, via a December 19, 2020 report from Thomas Clark, MD, MPH, entitled Anaphylaxis Following an mRNA COVID-19 Vaccine Receipt, included a very interesting graph. According to the CDC, as of December the 18th, 3,150 people who had been vaccinated against COVID-19 became, are you sitting down, quote, unable to perform normal daily activities. And the numbers over a period of just a few days are downright, well, booga, booga, booga scary, although there's genuine cause, in this case, to be alarmed. Registrants said the top line of the chart, with one recorded dose of the vaccine, as of December 14th, there were 679 of them. The next day, over 6,000. The following day, 27,000. And by December the 18th, they had reached almost 113,000 guinea pigs poked with this stuff. And on each day, the number of high-impact events, as they call it, euphemistically, went from 3 on the 14th to almost 1,500 on December 17th, and then double that the next day to 3,150 on December 18th. What does that mean? Well, these are events that make the recipient of the COVID mRNA vaccine, quote, unable to perform normal daily activities, unable to work, and or requiring care from a doctor or healthcare professional. And since math is hard, well, not for people that are listening to this show, I have no doubt, but certainly for those that think that the Daily Mail or CNN are telling you the truth, we can do the percentages here virtually by inspection. 3,150 out of 112,000 is almost 3%. Well, 2.79% if you want to be precise, and they don't. Of the guinea pigs who took the poke that are suddenly unable to perform normal daily activities. Let me see here. Almost 3% that took the vaccine? For a booga booga flu that among those under the ages of about 60 or so has a 0.0 and then depending on your age, not very much likelihood of death. And that's if you actually catch the thing. Yeah, folks, you are anywhere from 10 to 1,000 times, depending upon your age, and they're not going to give you any more detail than that, you can rest assured, more likely to suffer really nasty health effects from the vaccine than you are from the thing they're trying to scare you about. And they're not going to tell you about the deaths, you can also rest assured, I wouldn't be surprised if they count them as COVID, but don't ascribe them to the vaccine. And hey, who cares anyway, right? The manufacturers and those who push this stuff don't have any liability for the deaths they're going to cause anyway. And two more things I think are worthy of pointing out right here. One, the first jab isn't the only, and just about everybody who actually knows what they're talking about is admitting, oh yeah, any side effects will be far worse after they hit you the second time around. Yeah, you betcha. Isn't it great they don't have to worry about being sued then, especially? There have been absolutely zero, because hey, at warp speed, you can't do long-term testing. There has been absolutely zero testing regarding long-term side effects or other effects from this, the biggest mass medical experiment in history. And those guinea pigs who are taking the mRNA versions of the vaccine are literally going to have their DNA modified permanently and irreversibly, as Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and many, many others have been pointing out responsibly. What's it going to do to them? Well, the guinea pigs will find out firsthand. The rest of us probably won't be allowed to tweet about it, much less read about it in scientific journals that won't allow the papers to be published. Do you think I'm kidding or even exaggerating? Well, from the Western Journal later this week, a doctor in Northern California has been fired from his job after he co-authored a letter that even questioned the so-called science behind his county's lockdown orders. Dr. Michael Desbois Blanc was working as the Trauma Medical Center Director for John Muir Health in Contra Costa County until last Friday after he questioned the scientific basis for locking down the formerly free peons in his area. And by now you can guess what happened. Bottom line, folks, and no, socialist media is not going to let you talk about this either. From the bioweapons release to the lockdowns and muzzles and the election fraud that was built on those to the Capo de Tutte cappers, the Zyklon B vaccine itself, and okay, they are plural, this is without question the nastiest act of massive human experimentation in history. Well, so far. The mark of the beast is coming, and this is very much the warm-up act for it. The propaganda efforts, though, are certainly unabated nowadays. From wear your muzzle like a good little slave to take the poke and see just how good of a guinea pig you make. The level of BS that people are getting fed nowadays, and swallowing for the most part, by the way, is simply off the charts. Here's one from JustTheNews.com. A fact-checking outlet for Two Facebook is defending its arguably indefensible business relationship with an app company linked, where else, to the Communist Chinese Party, an arrangement that it says has raised some controversy over recent weeks, well, except, of course, in the leftist reporting sites, amid elevated activity by what are laughably called fact-checkers across socialist media platforms, lead stories with which Facebook has contracted as a fact checker, sick, since February 2019, is also involved in consultation work with TikTok, a socialist media company which allows users to share quick video clips and other things, whether they know it or not. TikTok is owned by ByteDance, a company headquartered in Beijing that's been the subject of at least some on the right when it comes to media attention because of their links with the Communist Chinese Party. And like a great many China-based corporations, it says ByteDance is overseen in part by an internal committee of communist representatives. Sounds a lot like some of those big American, sick socialist media companies too, doesn't it? It also reportedly maintains a professional partnership, kind of a public-private partnership, with the Chinese government's Security Bureau. And at least 5 dozen managers at ByteDance are reportedly on the communist committee there. And they go through the names, but you get the general idea. How about this one? From the other side of the news, the fake side, and the New York Times, under the media equation, their headline claims that the red slime lawsuit, as they put it, could sink right-wing media. And you can see them salivating all over their shoes. Voting machine companies, it says, threaten highly dangerous cases against Fox, Newsmax, and OAN, claims Floyd Abrams. And it starts talking off the top about a guy that, well, up until lately, they seem to have been denying. Antonio Mujica, a young Venezuelan software engineer who shifted the focus of his digital security company, SICK Smartmatic, which had been working for banks, to, oh, guess what? Electronic voting machines. And he began building a global company, they bloviate, that ultimately provided voting machinery and software to steal elections. No, I put that in there, admittedly, from Brazil to Belgium and his native Venezuela, where one of his first big contracts. See, multiple other, and I'd suggest far more reliable sources, and I don't see this in there either, was to help Hugo Chavez steal an election. You know what, folks? Interestingly, the name Chavez doesn't even appear in this piece of tripe from the New York Times, which kind of tells you a little bit about how objective it just might be. Rather than even trying to call it a conspiracy theory, it seems that they'd rather just pretend the connection doesn't even exist. What the Times chooses to do instead is claim that lawyers expect that maybe the right-wing networks would get sued. While I'm sure they know plenty of crooked judges that would uphold the lawsuits, and they quote experts saying they have a very good case, which is why we have defamation law. Isn't it funny, folks? We live in a nation where states don't even have to follow their own constitutions when it comes to elections, but if you point it out, uh-oh, and I think a lot of people have already seen that this is the case, the whistleblower is far more likely to go to jail than the various criminals all up and down the line who aid, abet, and covered it up. But it says all of these allegations, in spite of jokes about it, are no joke for Smartmatic and Dominion. Mr. Mujica said he's taken worried calls from governments and politicians all over the world, concerned that Mr. Trump's poison would seep into their politics and turn a Smartmatic contract into a liability. Well, because maybe, folks, people realize just how badly they've been duped, lied to, and used by manipulators like this. Mr. Mujica, though, hasn't made up his mind, concludes the New York Times, whether he's going to sue or not, concludes author Ben Smith. I asked Mr. Mujica if he'd settle for an apology. Quote, is the apology going to reverse the false belief of tens of millions of people who believe in these lies, he asks? Then I could be satisfied. Hey, folks, some of us would be satisfied if we had an honest election, a bit of integrity in politics, and a return to the rule of law. And given the level of perfidy here, from politicians to propagandists, that doesn't look likely. So what the heck? Let's wrap it up this evening with a bit of shameless propaganda from across the pond. The BBC, bastion of all that is proper and right, as Brit Steve Watson puts it, has published a handy Christmas guide for how to talk down to any of your relatives who still believe in those nasty conspiracy theories. And it's a huge sack, he says, full of cringe. How should you talk to friends and relatives who believe conspiracy theories, says the BBC headline. Yes, it begins. You're no doubt dreading the moment as your uncle passes the roast potatoes. He casually mentions that the coronavirus vaccine will be used to inject microchips into our bodies to track us, says the 5-point guide. Or maybe it's that point when a friend, after a couple of pints, starts talking about how COVID-19 doesn't exist. Notice, folks, how they exaggerate the truth and make it into a parody of what they're trying to use as a straw man to knock down. It's not, obviously, that the COVID-19 bioweapon doesn't exist. It's the megadeaths that don't. And the fact that most of the dumbed-down public has been so cowed by cases, they don't recognize that most of them don't. They're symptomless, which by definition used to mean they weren't actual medical cases, and most of them are false positives. And no, the BBC is not about to clarify that. Cringe. Okay, says Watson, I'll bite. So what does one do in this horrible situation, oh mighty and wise BBC Big Brother? Their answer, keep calm. Don't be dismissive of the oh-so-dismissible deplorables. Encourage critical thinking, as if they have a clue what that even means. Ask questions. Don't expect immediate results. Remember, your host adds helpfully here, as their Fuhrer has taught them, the big lie must be repeated over and over and over again before it begins to take root and grow like the cancer that it is. It only works if we don't call it out, and it's about time. We're watching almost everything that generations of Americans fought and died for being destroyed right before our very eyes. The Bible says there's a time not to keep silent. And I think that's about the least we need to be doing.